The hospital is one place we do not want to go to dine out. Just a fact. But then sometimes we must. And that leads us to ask, how does one cook for guests who would rather be someplace else?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Well, hello out there. You are tuned in to the 1,194th edition of the Food Chain right here on the radio station here. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along in the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What Radio. Folks, a hospital food story from your host. I have a craving for rhubarb pie. I blame on that craving on my mother, who made the absolute best rhubarb pies ever and has long since passed. So, nothing out there to satisfy my craving. I can't find rhubarb pie like she once made anywhere, but I'm always hungry for one. When restaurant wait persons bring the dessert menus, I must always ask, "Do you have rhubarb pie?" And they always answer with, "Sorry, how about some cheesecake?" Well, I'm not craving cheesecake, don't hunger for it at all. So I almost always pass on dessert, and there's a good side to that, right? Recently, I found myself in the hospital for an overnight stay. When I checked in, the lady behind the desk asked if I had any special need the hospital could attend to. I replied, "Well, yes, I'd like some rhubarb pie." "Sorry," she said, "how about some cheesecake?" "No, thanks." The nurses who tended me also asked what they could do to make me feel better, to which I answered, "Rhubarb pie." One of them wrote on my status board, "Special needs, rhubarb pie." I soon became the ward's rhubarb pie guy. The morning after my procedure, who should show up in my room but the hospital's executive chef. After introducing himself, "What is it that you really want?" When I pointed out the special request on the status board, he said, "Well, would you like that rhubarb pie for lunch with some salmon, some fresh green beans, coffee?" And that, ladies and gentlemen, was the meal that sent me home from the hospital fat and sassy. I often think of that meal and the setting in which it was served and wonder, how does one cook for guests who would rather be somewhere else? Who better to ask than the chef who brought me that rhubarb pie? Steve Ward, who is the executive chef for Dignity Dominican Hospital here in our home port of Santa Cruz, California. Steve, welcome to the Food Chain.
Thank you.
And thank you for the rhubarb pie. I don't know if I ever had the opportunity to thank you, though I think I tried a few times. So you showed up and asked me, "Hey, what is it that you really want?" You must have heard from the nurses that there's a crazy guy that wants rhubarb pie or something, right?
It was either from one of the nurses or from one of the administrators that rounded on you.
Uh-huh. Okay. But how did you pull it off? How did you put that meal together? How did you make that rhubarb pie?
Yeah, the meal was easy to prepare and everything, and after sending someone to the store for rhubarb, it wasn't hard to make the pie.
Well, I got to tell you, that was service because I have been unable to find rhubarb pie at any restaurant in town. So there it is. I got to go home from the hospital with a full belly of rhubarb pie. You know, the more I think about that meal that you served me, gosh, it was delicious. Salmon, fresh green beans. They weren't soggy. They weren't ugly. They were beautiful.
And I might point out the salmon was fresh also.
And the salmon was fresh too. So what happened to hospital food? I mean, you know, if you Google hospital food, what you come up with is disaster after disaster after disaster.
Well, it is Santa Cruz. You don't really want to serve hospital food here.
There you go. But you have to, wherever we're at, you have obstacles to overcome when you're an executive chef at a hospital. Huge obstacles. If you sit down and think about it, you're preparing food for a lot of people within an institutional setting. You're preparing food for people with all kinds of dietary restrictions. You're preparing food for people who would rather be someplace else, as did I. So those are the things I'd like to cover. I'd like to figure out how on earth you, as an executive chef, overcome those obstacles to prepare this incredible meal for me and a lot of other people. Where did you start?
It's not just myself. I have a great staff that works.
What does an executive chef mean? Executive part.
I oversee all aspects of the kitchen and all aspects of food service.
Okay. So you're the head guy, and you have a lot of people working for you.
Right. A lot of good people.
Mm-hmm. How do you keep them good?
Work alongside them. Listen to what they need. Listen to what they want. Try to give them the tools that they need to be successful.
And when they're not paying attention, you have to step in and say, pay attention.
But that doesn't happen very often. I'm really, like I said, I'm really fortunate. I have a real good crew, as well as a really good food service director, too.
Well, and good crews always take good leadership, too. Somebody has to be there to tend the crew. So when did you, how did you become an executive chef? Where does the process start?
Well, I went to culinary school. It's actually my second career. I used to engineer fire equipment for restaurants, race cars, and mining equipment.
Really?
And then we were at a convention one day, and right next to us was a culinary school. And I started spending more time at their booth than I did ours.
As would I, right?
So I just really got turned on by cooking and everything and quit my job and went to culinary school.
And what led you to head toward industrial chef, being an industrial chef, rather than being a Hollywood, you know, television chef or a fancy restaurant?
My chef career started back with casinos and country clubs and everything. So it's going to sound kind of selfish why I got into the hospital business, but it was the schedule, Monday through Friday, instead of 7 days a week, 80 hours a week.
Right.
But then...
And that's what chefs do, typically, isn't it?
Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But then it transferred over to being more than that. It was, you're helping people get well, so.
Yeah. Well, and in that regard, is that not, and I'd like to address the interface between a hospital and the patient. It seems like one of the primary interactions is food. I mean, it's really where you touch people, isn't it?
Right, and the food is part of the healing process. So
both physically and emotionally mentally, as well. Right. So we'll pick that up as we go along. So you went to chef school.
Yes.
And what was your first job?
At a country club. I did an apprenticeship at a country club for 3.5 years.
Uh-huh. Which is a pretty fancy place. Country clubs. You have to do everything right. You have to have...
Oh, I did my apprenticeship under a German chef. It was pretty tough.
Well, I happened to have a job at a country club once, and I remember the chef. He was being a pretty mean guy. So
yeah, ours used to throw things and all sorts of stuff.
Throw things, yeah. Chefs that throw things. But you can't do that, can you?
Not anymore.
Not anymore. Okay. Then you headed into a hospital. How did you find your way into hospitals?
I had a friend that was working for a food service contract company, and there was an opening, and he asked me if I actually wanted the opening, and he started telling me about, you know, the hours, and it sounded good.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I started.
So there, and how did you end up? Because you came here from Midwest someplace.
From Kansas City.
Kansas City. And how did you get the job?
I was working, like I said, I was working for a food service contract company, and a position opened up here in Santa Cruz, and they offered me the position.
Okay.
And I used to live in California in the 80s, and it was really nice, and I knew Santa Cruz and the people and the environment, and that's what won me over.
Don't tell anybody how nice it is, okay? All right, good. Well, let's talk a little bit about how you go about feeding your patients and whatnot. When I was a mess cook in the Navy, they sent me to the kitchen for a few weeks as part of the being a sailor, and I remember great big pots and pans. And I remember being able to crack 6 eggs at one time, but, you know, we were feeding sailors, so it was okay if you got a few shells in there. But And it, but it was a lot different, you know, because in the Navy, you had to eat what they fed you. And, you know, you could complain and everybody would. But a hospital's customers, patients are really the customers, and whole different story there. So how do you go about tending to all of those different patients?
Yeah, there's quite a job sometimes. You have to, I don't know how many different diets there are that you have to pay attention to.
Well, that's, yep. How many are there? I mean,
there's quite a few, actually. But we get printed sheets telling us what diets the patients are on.
Okay.
And then we take the menu from that with the nutritionists and work with them and then develop the menus and the food items that they need.
Okay. Well, there are, I can see a whole bunch of different dietary guidelines. There's the medicinal guidelines or the physical guidelines. If you have somebody that's a diabetic, I guess, you know, they would have one kind of diet. But there's also the social diets. Like maybe somebody's a vegetarian and somebody's a vegan and somebody's a keto diet or
right,
whatever.
Gluten-free or, right.
So there's a lot of complications there. Take us through some of the different kinds of medicinal diets that a doctor would prescribe.
Well, like I mentioned, the gluten-free diet.
Mm-hmm.
And then, like you said, a patient with diabetes has a, you know, diabetic diet. It just goes on with that. It just depends on the patient itself.
Mm-hmm. What about if somebody's very sick and can't digest things very easily?
We have liquid diets also.
Would you describe what a liquid diet is and how?
Well,
chicken soup.
Well, chicken broth.
Chicken broth. Okay.
And then, but there's other items that they have too. The Nepro. There's all sorts of, you know, purees. Mm-hmm. And we try to get everything as close to what they think they're actually getting, like a regular food, as it can be. Like our purees, we have molds that make the food look like it's supposed to look.
Wow.
So that way when they open up the plate, you know, they don't see just
a blob,
a pureed mess on the plate. Okay. They actually see what's supposed to look like.
Yeah, and the eyes are first to feast.
Exactly.
So that makes a big difference for somebody who's often wondered, do patients eat mostly because they're hungry or mostly because they're bored?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I was in the hospital not too long ago, and that's one thing I look forward to is the food coming in. There wasn't a doctor there poking on me or a nurse telling me, you know, I'm going to give you a shot now or something like that. It was the time you could actually relax. And
that's what I meant, you know. Oh, somebody
like
loves me,
home.
They're bringing me food. You know, so they're not coming to give me a shot or something
that. So that's how I always look at it. I always look like this is their time that they can get away from everything.
Well, good. Let's see. I guess what we can do is get ready for our first break. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. I'll press this button here. There we go. And today we're talking with Stephen Ward, who's the executive chef at Dignity Dominican Hospital in Santa Cruz, California. We're talking about what on earth it takes to feed somebody who really doesn't want to be there. And your job is not only to feed them, to get them the nutrition, but in a very real sense, your job is to make them feel better emotionally and spiritually, because you're the person giving them the food. How do you go about doing that, giving all of the constraints put upon you? And those constraints are where we're going next when we come back from this quick break. Michael Olson, Food Chain Radio Program, and you, of course, Stephen Ward, Executive Chef, Dignity Dominican Hospital.
And now, more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Food Chain Radio Program. Today we're talking with Stephen Ward, who's the executive chef at Dignity Dominican Hospital. He even has a chef uniform. So, and that's a big deal, to have a good uniform when you walk into a patient's room, and here's the chef. It's not a doctor. It's not a nurse. It's a chef. It's a big deal. I'd like to talk a little bit about some of the constraints, some of the obstacles you as an executive chef must overcome to actually satisfy your patients, your customers. And one of the first things is that you must act within the confines of an institution. And we've all by now, you know, had an opportunity to interact with institutions, and that's tough work because they have a tough life too. Institutions have to really watch the dollars and cents. Most hospitals, as I understand it, hire out or contract out their food service to somebody else. Was that part of your experience too?
Yes, that's actually how I got to Santa Cruz. I worked for a food service contract company, mm-hmm. and they had a job opening here in Santa Cruz and offered it to me.
Good. So, and they have many. They probably work with many hospitals throughout the country then, right?
Correct.
And they probably can do a pretty good job because they benefit by the economies of scale, so they can buy food in large quantities and distribute it pretty efficiently.
Right, they have nationwide contracts.
But you're not there anymore.
No.
So your hospital, Dignity Dominican, went on its own. Isn't that kind of daring?
I thought it was good.
You thought it was?
I thought it was a good thing.
Uh-huh.
I've always wondered, even when I was working with the food contract company, I always wondered, why don't they do it themselves? If they're paying somebody else to do this, it seems like they could do it themselves and actually save money.
Mm-hmm. And probably, you know, not only save money, but probably do a little bit better in on the customer service angle too, right?
Because I think we have since we've switched over to being Dignity employees. Mm-hmm. I think so.
So you work directly for the hospital. That means you answer to the president of the hospital.
Yes, sir, I do.
Mm-hmm. There you are. And if something goes wrong, she won't call the food service company that they've contracted. She'll walk right down the
directly
hall.
Directly to us, yes, sir.
There you are. So what are the other constraints of an institution that you see? I mean, compared to, for example, a country club that you work with? Is it just the bigness of it all?
Well, not just the bigness. There's like you said, there is more restraints. There's more people looking at you. Mm-hmm. More people watching what you do, mm-hmm. making sure you're doing it correctly and following all the health laws and
okay.
you're supposed to.
That would be another constraint of an institution, which would be the rules and regulations and laws that the government probably puts on you that you have to contend with. Who keeps track of all that stuff?
Well, the hospital keeps track of it, but I mean, we get copies of all the inspections and everything like mm-hmm. that.
So, and the rules and regulations, there must be a million of them. There's a million rules and regulations for everything, and I would expect a hospital to have 10 times more than anything else.
If you look at it a chef's point of way, it's really all the same. You have rules that make sure that you're cleaning everything. You have rules that make sure you're following all the food guidelines and everything. So it's all that wasn't the hard part.
Huh. Well, that's good.
That seems like that was the easy part because every restaurant, every country club, every casino I've been in has guidelines that you have to follow. And they're basically almost the same, trying to get to the same result.
Mm-hmm. And one would suspect that, you know, hospitals being in business for a long, long time have that procedure pretty well figured out. Then we talked a little bit about preparing food for people with all kinds of dietary restrictions. We talked a little bit about people who had a real tough time digesting food. It being a hospital, that might be part of it. And then there must be a spectrum of food difficulties that you must deal with, and that must require an interaction between a number of people. One I suspect would be a doctor. One I suspect would be a nutritionist of some kind.
And then after that, it gets down to me.
So what is the food chain there?
The physicians prescribe the diets. The nutritionists make sure the diets are what they're supposed to be. They hand it to me, and then I prepare the food.
Okay, so the doctor says this is the kind of food that we have to work with here.
Or the kind of diet.
The kind of diet. Nutritionist says, well, this is your guidelines. And so you say, okay, this is what's left for me to do then.
Right. And I have to make it so it tastes just like nothing's happened to it.
Okay. There you go. And you have and how do you communicate? Because you have to communicate that to your staff. That's a big job then.
Right. We have daily huddles and meetings, and mm-hmm. if you do the process right,
kind of,
it's all easy.
Kind of like a football team getting ready to play a game.
Right, right.
Yeah. And so all of those must be communicated now. You had a lot of people. And each one of them, it would seem, has its own, his or her own diet.
Well, it's not. Well, the cooks do different diets. They try, like I said, we try to prepare all the same food for the same diets.
Oh, okay.
So if we can do that, it's just different cooking procedures for the cooks to do.
Okay.
To get to the final point.
Okay, good. So get a basic meal going and then just make spin-offs of that one.
Right, exactly. Leave something out or add something to it that the patient can have or can't have.
Okay, and then one of the big ones to me is preparing food for people who would rather be elsewhere.
Oh, everybody who wants to be in a hospital.
Because who wants to be in a hospital? So this would seem to require some. How do you manage that? I mean, you have to. You're the one that really is in charge of feeding people, and one of the things you feed them is food, but. That food also means, you know, it's a psychological thing, too. It's like we were talking about earlier, what do people look forward to in a hospital? At lunch and breakfast and dinner, you know. Somebody's bringing me food. So how do you face up to that?
Well, my food service director and I, we always go out and around and try to see what the local trends are in the community and everything and uh-huh. see what the people are actually eating. And then we try to go and develop a menu around those trends and use the food that everybody's used to having or wanting to have.
Wow. So being close to the community is a big part of that.
I think so. We notice that the people around, there's a lot of sushi restaurants. There's a lot, everybody here is fresh fish. Nobody wants frozen fish.
Yeah.
So we went out and we actually have sushi for those patients now. And all our fish is fresh. It's all great.
Wow. And do you have a sushi chef down there in the kitchens?
No, I actually taught the people doing the sushi how to do it. And
uh-huh.
We just learned from scratch.
So it's really a hands-on kind of a feeding situation. Is there a big difference between that and working for a service company that a hospital would otherwise hire and bring somebody in? Would they have that community touch?
The contract companies usually have a set menu that they want you to prepare for the hospital for the patients.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one thing I always thought was wrong because they're not looking at the local, what the local people eat or anything. People eat in the Midwest, they eat different than here in Santa Cruz. So their menus are developed by somebody in the Midwest. It's going to reflect that.
Sure, and if you're a big institutional supplier of many hospitals, you're supplying many hospitals, and all of them kind of lose their individuality that way.
Right.
So then you end up with institution food.
And I don't think we have that at all.
Okay, well, it certainly wasn't my experience, which is why we're here. How the heck did you do that? How did you break away from that institutional food setting? And that's a part of an executive chef's job. Like you said, you and your food service director, what does a food service director do?
He oversees all aspects, the nutritionalists, the cooks, myself,
mm-hmm.
The diet aides. He oversees everything.
Was he or she a chef as well?
I don't believe so. I've always known him from being a director. So.
Okay, as a director, okay. I know directors.
I mean, I know he, if we're behind, or if we're missing people or anything, he jumps right in and works any position in the kitchen.
Okay. Okay. So knows enough about everything to get the job done. Well, a hospital's customers are so very important, but they're patients, but they're also the customers. And again, we go back to that importance of making them satisfied.
You know, that's where my country club experience comes in.
I was wondering about that.
Because at the country club, you never can say no. If one of the members come in, it's just like your boss coming in and asking you to do something. You never want to tell your boss no. So I look at it that way when I go talk to a patient. If they want something, I do whatever I can to make sure that happens.
Well, you know, that was the fun thing about my experience with the hospital is that the first person that I met at the check-in counter, as it were. Is there anything we can do to help you? And that's when I thought, well, let's have some fun and ask for the rhubarb pie. You know, but that concern was that, gee, I felt like a customer instead of a patient.
You know, I thought it was fun as well. I don't get to do rhubarb pie every day, so.
So, okay. What's the kitchen like down there? Describe your kitchen for us. It must be huge.
That's a big kitchen. It could be bigger, but it's fine. I mean, it's just like any other kitchen. We have different stations where they prepare different parts of the food.
Okay. How many people are working in that kitchen then? Hard to keep track.
Yeah, it's hard. Yeah, it is, because then you have the diet aides coming in. You have all the nutritionists coming in. You have the pot washers, the dishwashers, then all the cooks.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things, you know, one of the institutional constraints that I always see is that most of the food always comes in to most hospitals, I suspect, that are served by professional contractors. Comes in packaged, ready to cook. And, you know, some of the articles I read, they have trays. They just put them in a microwave, and that's that. Everything's ready to go. Not like that.
Not like that at all. Mostly everything's fresh. Probably 95% of the stuff we do is fresh. When I first got here, I went and made sure I toured the produce of the farms and everything, so I could make sure everything was good enough and they were doing things properly and everything. So
So you actually get produce from local farms?
Oh yes, we do. We try to localize anything that we can.
Wow. So isn't there a cost to that? I mean, that's expensive. It's work. Going to the farmer's market's work.
Yeah, but all I had to do was tour the farms, and all I have to do now is get on the phone and order from the farms.
Okay.
So I have a produce company that works closely with the farms.
Mm-hmm. And so everybody knows you, and you know everybody, so no cheating or anything. Why bother?
Well, I'm not saying they don't try, you know, like slipping in an old product here and there, but it's easy to find. You catch it.
What's this? Send it back.
Right, exactly.
Is that what you do?
That's what I do.
And if you keep sending it back, they'll...
I usually only have to send it back once. It's almost like they're testing you.
There you go. Always like that. What other kind of institution, like government rules and regulations we talked about, they must be significant, but they're pretty easy because they're pretty standard.
They're standard, and you know what? As long as you keep the kitchen clean and you're doing things as you're supposed to, it's all easy.
Right. And your kitchens are inspected all the time?
Oh, yes, sir, they are.
How often do they come through?
Well, the hospital inspects, and we never know when they're coming in, but it's almost weekly. The health department, the county health department, they come in. They do it, two or three times a year, I believe. Right. Then there's the state auditors that come in, and I believe that's once maybe a year, maybe twice. And then you have certain government regulatory agencies that come in and inspect also, and they're different times of the year.
So the easiest thing in the world would be to just keep things clean.
Exactly.
And that way...
Follow the procedure and you don't have any worries. Yeah.
Otherwise, you find yourself in a bunch of deep doo-doo.
Right.
Well, good. What's the most fun part of your job?
You know, it was like when you were in, when I brought the rhubarb pie, the expression on your face.
Yeah.
I think
what a surprise.
Yeah, exactly. Seeing the patients... It's the way they respond to the food. That's what I like.
And so the patients. So that means you have to go out of the kitchen.
Oh, yes. I talk to the patients whenever I can.
Mm-hmm.
It's like being a chef at a restaurant. You want to go out and make sure you ask the customers how they're enjoying their food and everything. Same thing in the hospital.
Have you ever thought about doing a celebrity hospital chef move? Television series, something like that. People love that kind of stuff. But, you know, when it comes to hospital food, people always, you know, think it's terrible. But it doesn't have to be.
You know, I don't think ours is. You know, I actually, when I eat lunch or when I eat dinner, breakfast, when I'm at the hospital, I go after the patient food. I wait till the patients are served, and I take whatever's left over.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
So... I'd like to ask you about diets now. Which ones Do you are you on one of the diets, on the POP diets? Are you on keto? Are you on?
No, I probably should be, but I'm not.
As a chef, how do you look at all of those different diets?
It's easy. I work along with the nutritionists. They have to do all the hard work. I do the easy part. I just have to fix it.
Uh-huh. What do they do? I mean, they decide working with the doctors then.
Correct. And so what the patient's needs are.
Uh-huh. They must have a lot of training for that.
I suppose so.
To be a chef like that. Well, folks, this is the Food Chain Radio program. Mike Lolson, we've been talking with Stephen Ward, and we have one more break. And when we come back, I'd like to ask him about the psychology of food and how he goes about managing people, managing to make people happy. And I'm going to ask him also how we should go about ordering food when we're in a hospital. What do we need to know to be good patients and what to ask for? This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson, your host for this hour, with Stephen Ward. He's the executive chef of Dignity Dominican Hospital right here in Santa Cruz, California. We will be right back.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Well, folks, some time ago, a little time ago, I had the occasion to spend an overnighter in the hospital, and I had a wonderful experience with working with the hospital staff because I chided them. They all wanted to know what they could do to make my stay good. And I said, well, rhubarb pie. And lo and behold, the executive chef shows up in my room in the morning. I was getting ready to leave, and he said, what do you want? And I said, I want rhubarb pie. And he said, well, would you like some salmon, some fresh salmon to go along, fresh green beans, cup of coffee? And so I went home fat and sassy. I had my rhubarb pie and salmon and fresh green beans. And so I got to thinking about that meal over time and got to thinking about all of the constraints a hospital chef must overcome to put together a fine meal like that. First of all, you have to have the support of the institution you work for. Is that right, Stephen?
Yes, sir, it is.
You got to have somebody behind you saying, yes, this is something we want to do. But then for a hospital, that would be pretty easy because that's what patients want. Somebody feed me something good. Don't treat me like, you know, you're going to slide me some slop. I want something good. And patients need it not only for their health, but for their emotional well-being. Because those times in a patient's stay in a hospital where somebody comes in with a tray of food, that's, you know, something friendly. It's not a doctor or a nurse or somebody poking at you or asking you bad questions. So that's a blessing. But how do you get there? So you need the institution support. You got to have access to good food, right?
Which we do.
And you do. So
we live in a very, I mean, look where we live.
Yeah, We live in a very bountiful area here in the Monterey Bay area of California. We're blessed. But a lot of areas are blessed as well. And still, they have these institutional constraints that prevent executive chefs like yourself from going out and searching down the good foods. It's much easier, much less expensive to take, you know, the food that comes in big packages and throw them in a microwave and serve them up.
Yeah, but then you're not giving the patient satisfaction. The patients aren't happy.
That's right. Then we hate hospital food and institution food. How do you make bland foods from some diets taste really good? I mean, you have sugar-free diets. You have salt-restricted diets.
Right, but mostly they can all eat the herbs that you have, so you just start experimenting with the spices and the herbs, and once you get the taste right, it's there.
Makes a big difference.
It does.
Makes sense. So you take regular food and you start spicing it up.
Well, I take a regular diet.
There's no institutional constraints against spicing up the food?
No, there's not.
Good.
as long as the diet allows that spice in there.
Right, right.
But no, we take a regular plate of food that you would have at home or so, and then write that recipe down, then take it to the nutritionist, and they say, well, you can't have this. You have to change this. So then we go back and we change it and add whatever we think will please the nutritionist and also make the food taste like it's supposed to taste. And then we just go back to the nutritionist again and they okay it or say, no, you got to change it again.
So you have to please everybody.
And then the physicians also.
The physicians, the nutritionists, the patients.
Patient must have
administration, everybody. And do the administrators eat your food?
I see them in the dining room all the time.
There you go. Okay. So you can't really short shrift anybody. What about us as patients? You know, what can we do to be better patients? How can we cleverly order our food so that it comes out good?
Well, it's like you. Like you mentioned what you would like to have. If we don't know what you would like, then you're getting the generic tray. All you have to do is, at our hospital, all you have to do is speak out. I always try to tell people to come and, you know, I go to a room and I get called you. I probably gave you my phone number or how to get in touch with me.
Yeah, you gave me a card.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I do that with all the patients I go talk to. And if they want something, all I have to do is call. And
do they?
Oh, they do quite often.
Tell me about your worst patient.
Be careful.
You know, I can't think of one incident here.
Really?
In Dominican. Not at all.
Are patients kind of docile?
Well, no, there's some very vocal patients, but you know what? You listen to them, and you try to bring them what they want or what they think they want, and everything calms down.
Uh-huh. I think that takes us back to the emotional side of what you're doing, right?
Yeah, right. They look at it that way, too. They're like, oh, I've had them say, oh, this
I can't,
tastes just
I can't
like my
yell
mom.
At the doctor.
Right.
I can't yell at the nurse, but that chef I can yell at.
Until you bring in what they want, and then all of a sudden you're their best friend.
Okay. So there really is an emotional side to your job, then, to feeding people.
Sure is. I don't know, when I see the look on their faces after they get what they want, it makes me happy.
Mm-hmm. What does not please them?
Heart-healthy diet.
Ah.
That's the one I hear most complaints about.
And that would be a fat-free diet?
Well, it's mostly the salt. And they're cutting out salt and all. So, you know, you're used to salt. Salt's in everything, you know?
Sure, sure.
And now everything's taken out, so it tastes different.
Mm-hmm. What do you think about the heart-healthy diet? I mean, this is about a lot of dietary changes here in the last few years, and where the American Heart Association used to hold up that heart healthy diet, now people are starting to say, well, wait a minute here, I'm not so certain about this low fat, no fat.
Well, that's when I start saying, well, you've got the herb packet right there, try to use the herbs that you have instead of the salt, take the place with the herbs and the salt and make
so you prepare an herb packet.
Well, It's an herb packet that we purchase.
Uh-huh. What is in it?
Like Mrs. Dash.
I guess, sure.
Something comparable to that. Mm-hmm. And well, it's just different. It depends on what packet it is, but it's just different herbs and spices.
Yeah. In the Navy, we always lived on Tabasco sauce.
Do we?
We put Tabasco sauce in everything.
Here it's Tapatio.
Yeah, everything. But that's what you had to do to survive. So what would you like to see as a major improvement, if you could, in terms of hospital food in general, it seems like the first thing that hospitals could do is get rid of their service contractors and hire a chef, and that would take it on himself or herself.
Food service companies.
I'm speaking in terms of if you were to advise other hospitals on how
I'm not saying food service contract companies is a bad thing. The chefs there are held to more constraints.
Yeah.
They have to follow their corporate rules more.
Mm-hmm. So if a hospital were to loosen those constraints, that would mean they would be more reliant on the chef, him or herself. I mean, they're a person there, right? Whereas the service contractors kind of have an institutional guidelines beyond which they can't tread. That you're out there treading in the farms and gardens.
Right. We can explore more opportunities to do things better than the food service contract mm-hmm. companies can.
You still have to answer to everybody. So right. You know, but you can. So to me, it would seem if you wanted to make your patients really happy, a hospital should look toward expanding the opportunities on different kinds of food in general terms. Would you advise other hospitals that loosening those institutional constraints and allowing a chef to make more decisions on local food?
That would be a good thing. Like the food service contract company that I worked for before, the vegetables were frozen.
And, that's what I meant.
And here now, all our vegetables are fresh, organic.
I have fresh green beans.
Yeah.
And I think...
And that was a simple fix.
Yeah, I think I was more surprised to get fresh green beans than just about anything, because that's the last thing you expect is fresh vegetables. But that's
one thing the food service director did first thing when I got here. Said we don't want any frozen vegetables.
There you go. So fresh vegetables.
And they also asked the food service director to stay as well as me.
Okay, so that means that you are working with constraints of the seasonal foods then.
Right.
Okay. But seasonal foods... you can probably get seasonal foods from just about everywhere in the world now. So you
can still get fresh vegetables year-round.
Yeah. Okay. What other advice would you give hospitals in general to make food better, make dining a better experience for their customers, the patients?
For the director, for the chef, for the cooks and everything, to listen more closely to the patients.
Good. Go visit the patients.
Exactly. They tell you what they want.
Mm-hmm.
And they start off, they always start off with steak and lobster.
Oh, well, I changed that dynamic. I asked for rhubarb pie. So, and that is a process of going into a room. How do you do that? How do you ask a patient? What is your procedure?
Well, I go in, I knock on the door, you know, and introduce myself, tell mm-hmm. them where I am, who I am, what I do at the hospital, and then take it from there. It's usually, they usually tell you what they want.
Sure. So you start a conversation.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Ask them how they are. That's kind of a loaded question sometimes.
Sure, sure.
Depending on how the person looks.
Mm-hmm. And so they tell you what you want.
Most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
Very vocal.
What besides steak and lobster?
They want food like their mother used to make them.
Like?
Comfort food.
Pie.
Right. Yeah.
My mother used to make rhubarb pie. That's what I want. It's my mother's pie.
You know, you hear that word, well, almost tastes like hers, and that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm. So comfort food.
Right.
What is your best comfort food?
You know, on our menus, I don't know if it's the best, but we have meatloaf on the menu.
Meatloaf, yeah.
And it's actually a good product, and it's what I had for lunch yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
We have salmon with strawberry salsa. We have chicken cacciatore. We have beef stew, all sorts of good food.
So how often do you rotate through that? I don't suppose people stay in hospitals very long anymore. So you probably, you know, how often do you rotate a menu?
I believe this is our third menu since I've been here, and I think I've been here 3 years.
Oh, okay. So, you know, it's kind of fixed. And how long do you think the average patient stays in a hospital?
You know what? I don't really know the average stay here. The hospitals I've been in before Dominican, the average stay was about 3 days.
3 days, yeah. And I know they don't keep people in hospitals very long anymore, whereas they used to keep them for what seemed to be a long time. And so you have a huge staff. The two things that we've learned so far that you would recommend is one, allowing that executive chef to go out and discover how to make food better. Two, listen to what your patients, always listen. What else?
Well, the biggest part is listening to the patients.
Mm-hmm.
After that, there's
After that would be the challenge of breaking away from the institutional sources of food then, right? And figuring out how to use more local ingredients.
Right.
That people are more accustomed to.
Around here, though, that's an easy thing to do.
Mm-hmm. But if you're in the Midwest, maybe not so easy to do. Most exciting times.
Well, you know, the other day I was walking in the hallway, and one of the patients was leaving. He was leaving the hospital, and he made it a point for me to come over and talk to him, and was telling me thank you for the food and everything, and how much that made him feel better. And He just said thank you. That was a great thing for me.
And that's a big reward for any chef,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
You eat my food, and what do you do with food waste in a hospital?
You know, we don't really have that much waste. We always utilize it. If we have counts for the patient food, so we know about how many we're going to feed and what diets we're going to feed. So that part's the easy part. The other part for the cafe, it's just like any other chef. You utilize other products different ways to make different parts of food that you can serve, if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
What is your favorite menu item?
On the patient's menu or?
Yeah.
I eat it every day. I don't know if I have a favorite.
There you go.
I mean, I think it's all
good.
So
you have patient's food and you have?
The cafe food.
Cafe food. Is the cafe food like staff food?
Oh, no, it's better. I don't see why more people don't come in for lunch.
Oh, really?
Our food's great.
So people can actually walk in off the street?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I don't see why more people don't.
So they have a big menu and everything, right?
We have a 3-week menu cycle. I think it's a great menu.
Now, can you imagine people actually coming in off the street to order up food from a hospital restaurant? My dad used to do that. He loved it.
It is a restaurant. Yeah. You prepare food for the people that's coming in to consume and purchase the food.
Well, folks, this is a Food Chain radio program and having a lot of fun with Stephen Ward and you. Hope you don't have to end up in a hospital, but when you do, hope you end up in a hospital with great food. Stephen, thank you so much for joining us. This has been the Food Chain radio program. And thank you all for tuning in, and see you next week for more What's Eating What radio.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain radio show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.